one of the metrics that I use is how many people who worked with me and for me are now CEOs. And that list has grown to 17. And so I think people have seen, and maybe they looked at it and said, gosh, if he can do it, anybody can do it. Maybe that's what they walked away with. But I think they learned a lot of what not to do and also a few things of what to do. And most important on that list is hire great people, develop people, bet on people, trust people, and reward people. All of those are key elements of what we have to do in our businesses today.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Happy New Year, and welcome to our first podcast for 2021. I'm hopeful that 2021 will give us more hope and joy, and that you had some time to take a break during the holiday and ready to embrace what 2021 offers us. I am. Our guest today is Glenn Tolman. Glenn is the founder and managing partner of investment firm 7Bio Ventures. He's also the founder and former CEO of the digital health company Livongo, which recently merged with Teladoc in a deal worth $18.5 billion. Glenn believes in personal development and driving for real success. He's passionate about developing others and giving back, something that his mother instilled in him early in his life, which had guided him in his business success. Here's our conversation. Welcome, Glenn. Thank you for joining me this morning. First of all, congratulations on all the great work that you've accomplished.
Thank you. It's great to be with you this morning.
Yeah. 2020, it's been like a great year and also a bad year. I feel like in life, we know there's bad thing and good thing can happen all at the same time, isn't it?
That's right. Well, you know, it's interesting. And we can't always control everything that happens to us and around us. So we have to take from those things and use the challenges as a springboard. And I think it's interesting when we talk and think about the coronavirus, we think about the tragic loss of life, and we think about the coming economic impacts and the mental and behavioral health impacts. But I also, on the other hand, say, can we use this as a way to springboard and use some of the digital innovation to make healthcare better and more abundant, to make commerce better and more abundant, to make connectivity better and more abundant? Can we use this terrible crisis as a way to springboard and get some good from it? So I'm hopeful, and I think particularly in healthcare, the advent of telehealth, where we can provide healthcare to people and meet them where we are, or where they are, I should say, that represents a great opportunity for us.
Yeah, I think that's usually when there's a lot of challenges, that's when our, you know, great thing can come up from it. So I always like to start with a little bit of your background. You've done quite a lot. Somehow you managed to have 50 hours a day in your life. You have started many companies, but I found that you have also different interests, you know, outside the healthcare. I noticed that you also did something, the glass blowing, and then the modern teacher. That was not unexpected, at least when I first thought about you. Maybe you can tell me more about your background, how do you grow up? Like, how do you end up where you are, you know?
Sure. Well, I will either have to give credit to or blame my mother for much of this. She raised six children. My dad was a more traditional provider. He traveled a lot. And so I give her tremendous credit for doing that. And she never said no to any of us. She was very much of a, you can try it and we'll see what happens. And so she bred a lot of curiosity in each of the children. And particularly in me, I think that allowed me to try and sample all kinds of different things. And I have a tremendous amount of curiosity about everything. So that was one piece of it. And second, you know, she instilled in us this idea of the importance of giving back. And that, I think, drives much of what I do. You know, you referenced a few of the companies that I've been involved in. And I always wanted to focus on really how do we use software and technology to improve businesses. But increasingly, as I was older, and as my youngest son, Sam, when he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, he was 8, he's now 26, and fortunately healthy. But that exposed me to the importance of healthcare and how hard we make it for people with chronic conditions to stay healthy. You'd think we'd do everything we could to make healthcare easier for people. And yet, every time they turn around, it's more confusing, more complex, and more costly than ever before, despite all the innovation that you're helping to drive and that we're working on, and it's not working. So I made it my lifelong task to improve healthcare. That said, you know, I'm also focused on education. I'm focused on the inequality, both racial inequality and economic inequality in our society. And so all of those areas have great interest to me. And then, of course, giving back. I've committed to give back virtually all of my financial gains back to society in ways that can impact and hopefully bridge this increasing divide that we have between mm-hmm. haves and have-nots.
That's great. That's good to hear. And as a mother, we hear all these stories about instilling curiosity. How much do you think is really nurturing, or is it something innate in you?
I really think it's a tremendous amount of nurture. And I think everyone is curious. You know, when each of us is born, we have to learn a language and we have to learn when you touch something that's hot, you learn you don't touch that anymore. And so I think we're born learners. And unfortunately, with our education system today and much of life is about teaching people not to learn when we should be doing the opposite. So I think everyone's born a learner. Everyone wants to be successful. And our job has to be, and I think all of us are educators and all of us are people. And our job has to be to allow people to flourish and to give them those opportunities. So, and I think she did that. In our companies, we try very hard to give people the opportunity to keep learning, to get better, particularly in what we do, which is about software and innovation and technology. We're recreating the company all the time. So, you know, sometimes I'll interview someone and they say, I have 10 years of experience. And I look at their resume and they've done the same job for 10 years. And so I said, no, you have 1 year of experience repeated 10 times. I don't mean to be insulting. I just mean to say, like, if you're not doing something different every year, if you're not pushing your boundaries, you won't be all you can be. You may still be successful. You may still be okay. And you may be happy. But for me, it's about really pushing that envelope of how can we not only get better personally, but how can we help others get better? How can we help others realize their potential? And that's a big part of what made Livongo, my last company, so successful. And I think that also breeds great leaders. And one of the metrics that I use is how many people who worked with me and for me are now CEOs. And that list has grown to 17. And so I think people have seen, and maybe they looked at it and said, gosh, if he can do it, anybody can do it. Maybe that's what they walked away with. But I think they learned a lot of what not to do and also a few things of what to do. And most important on that list is hire great people, develop people, bet on people, trust people, and reward people. All of those are key elements of what we have to do in our businesses today.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just really a great key point. And oftentimes people don't remember the importance about developing people, reward people. I found that your choice of undergraduate major I thought was interesting, social anthropologist. How do you you know, choose that? And what did you learn from that, you know, studying that field?
Well, I was lucky from an education standpoint. I went to a great liberal arts school called Bucknell University, a small school in rural Pennsylvania. And I spent 3 years there. I did a year abroad at the London School of Economics. And during my time at Bucknell, I really did the same thing that I think I've spent my life doing, and that is trying things, sampling things. What did I like? I started off in experimental psychology and worked with one of the foremost folks in the world. But then I concluded, I understand it. It's probably not what I want to do for my life. And so in that process of exploring, my undergraduate majors were actually a dual major in economics and psychology. But I became more and more interested in what surrounded us, which was a lot of Amish people. And I was amazed that, you know, they lived a life that was 100 years ago. You know, they didn't use electricity. They still use the horse and buggy. And then a professor of mine fell ill, and his wife asked me to come up and manage their farm. Now, I was a suburban kid from New Jersey. And when I ended up getting to the farm, the animals looked at me and I looked at them, and no one knew what was going to happen. I had seen these animals in zoos, but I was like, milk what? I have no idea how to do this. And the next thing I know, I was surrounded by these Amish folks who had come from the surrounding farms. And they just thought, one, it was very funny that I knew nothing how to do any of this. And then two, they started to take me back. I had no food, and I became fascinated with their culture and how they manage change. And that led to my studies and ultimately a Rotary Foundation fellowship to Oxford to study social anthropology, which is about how cultures change. And understanding that was actually a great, great preparation for software. And people say, well, what's a social anthropologist doing running software companies? And if you want to think about changing a culture today, think about software, because that's how we do it. Think about the impact that Facebook has had on the entire world and not so good on our elections and our own culture. So understanding the impact of how you change cultures, how you manage that, is probably more important than ever. I didn't know it at the time, but like a lot of liberal arts education, that balance and that experience a little bit in a lot of areas has turned out to be very valuable.
So based on what you learned about how to change a culture, and it seems it takes a long time, but software definitely speed it up. What are the few key factors that need to be there in order to change a culture?
Well, I think there's this wonderful saying. I think it's from, I don't know whether it's Winnie the Pooh, and it says, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And I think first and foremost, we have to really set out core values to say, where do we want to go? And then software can be a wonderful tool. Left to its own devices, I think software can take us in a variety of places that may not be so good. In fact, one of my both venture partners, I think one of the most successful venture folks in the Valley, Hemant Taneja from General Catalyst, he wrote an article for Harvard Business Review, and it was called "The Era of Move Fast and Break Things is Over." And it was saying, and that's the famous quote from Mark Zuckerberg saying, what we do in Silicon Valley is move fast and break things to learn. But in healthcare, you can't do that because the things are people. And his point was, we need a new model for healthcare. That's the kind of thinking that we need more than ever today. And yet we see so much less of it, starting with Washington, where we have no leadership and no real values-based leadership, which I think is even more important. So what we need today is to think about how we use these really powerful technologies to drive us in different directions. And just like nuclear power so many years ago, we understood that that can be very beneficial in terms of energy and other things. and it can be very bad in terms of how it was used. Same technology. So software might be more powerful, and we have to start to think about how we use that and where we want to end up as a society.
And how do you think, as where you are now, can influence that direction?
Well, I think that business has a very important role to play, that the next generation of leaders that we have a very important role to play in saying, here's the kinds of companies we want to build. At Livongo, one of the things we said is that in every area where we have an office, we will support and give to the communities. And we'll support four different charities: a women's battered women's shelter, a homeless shelter, a food bank, and last but not least, one that we added recently was organizations that support the development and advancement of African American and Black citizens. And so in each one of those cases, we said, well, we have to take care of our members, we have to take care of our clients, we have to take care of our own people, but we also have to give back and take care of the communities that we exist in. And we think of that as a business responsibility. If we do those four things right, then our shareholders will benefit. And they have benefited handsomely. So we think that model is a good model to work. But I think every business has to think broader than just how much money I can make. And I know you are an advocate of the same kinds of principles. So thank you for your leadership and what you're doing.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
I love what you're saying. And, I feel like we need more of you in the world.
I don't think we need more of me. A lot of people, one of me is plenty.
Like somebody taking more like you, who is like giving back how the importance of community, because I think we become a better person when our community thrives. And I also feel that you need to start young. Right. The like what you're saying, your mother is still on giving back early in life. What can we do? You've done a lot through your business to support all this organization. How do you instill more of the young people, the future leaders, to be more community centric, not so much about the money?
Well, I think that, that's a responsibility for all of us. I just wrote an article about the election, and I said, it's time to celebrate. And a lot of people, when they read that headline, they thought I meant who was elected. But what I really meant was celebrate how well our democracy worked. We had more people vote than ever before. And we know that when people vote, they're more likely to vote again. People, especially our young people, understood how important it was to vote, to express themselves on both sides. And that's really powerful. And they understood that a single vote or a few hundred votes could swing the whole election. And then new states popped up that we didn't think mattered in terms of voting. But it turns out they all matter. And that's exactly what our founders, when they started the country, hoped would happen, which is every state, every person had a role to play. So this is a process. Democracy is a verb. We have to keep working at it to be better and better. And we have to take responsibility. And I think the hardest thing is we have to call people out when they don't do it. And that's tough. But that we need a new form of leadership to refresh the country. And we need a new set of leaders who will enable that at every level. And yes, it's about our youngest people and teaching them the right values and principles. But I think it's about being young in spirit. And that is, you know, we've seen people in their 80s and, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example, you know, what a wonderful example right until the end. What a beautiful way to live your life then. Right until the end, she was working and writing opinions and active and inspiring others. And that's the kind of role models I think we need. But every one of us can do it every day. And sadly, we have to do it every day because we need to draw energy from each other to get to where we need to get to. So either you're moving forward or you're moving backward. There is no stasis anymore. And we have to make sure that we're moving forward and bring everybody along in this country and then around the rest of the world. We can do that. That's the beauty of technology. Technology creates abundance if we use it correctly. And that's really the kind of vision that I hope leads us forward. And I hope under this new administration, we can start to realize more of that.
Yeah. And I think it's also... we all face hardship and challenges, you know, throughout our life, and how to not build the cynicism, right? I think because once that you have the cynicism, then you don't have that passion.
And that's right.
How do you instill that?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, again, I think Plato said those carrying torches will inspire others or will hand them to others. And so I think when we have to all be examples. You know, the election of Kamala Harris was a beautiful example for so many young women and women of color. What can they do? And Indian women, you know, around the world, people watch that and they say, if that can happen, anything can happen. And so I think we just have to keep repeating those stories and make sure that the negatives, you know, one thing I don't love about our media, and I do love our media, but if there's one thing that we could do a little better is balance the negative stories with the positive stories, because there are so many positive stories. And we tend to focus when we see a plane crash. We forget that every day there's thousands, at least pre-COVID, thousands of planes flying successfully, moving people all around the world, spreading wonderful news. And yet one plane crash in one area gets the attention of the entire world. And so I think, you know, that's the challenge that we have to combat with balancing that to say, yes, bad things are going to happen individually, personally to all of us and broader things. We have to kind of work to say, okay, those are going to happen. We'll get through it. And we will continue to make sure that every moment we have here is one that is positive. JFK said that, you know, we have to go forth understanding that, you know, we have to do the work and we have to do it here. And I think that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's interesting how somehow negative news somehow attract more people to talk about things. But at the same time, when you see good things, like heartwarming things, it also went viral. So It can go both ways. It's just
I think biologically we're programmed. You know, if you see a bear standing outside your house, biologically you want to tell everybody you know that that's a risk, that's a danger. You know, if you see something positive out there, you're less likely to do that because we're programmed to for protection. We're built for risk. So if we see something bad happen, we want to, you know, spread that news. Don't let that happen to you. That's really bad.
Right.
So in some ways, what seems like a good thing can actually create that negative implication. So that said, we have to counterbalance that. We have to work to do that.
I wonder if you think, you know, most of the time, life goes pretty smoothly or some, you know, they take that is kind of like the norm, what's normal. It's like you take it for granted. And when you see something bad, there's something like, then you pay attention to it. I think that could be.
That's right. Yes, I agree.
So, but, so do you think that now that you have the exhibit Livongo, are you considering running for an office, the government?
No.
I don't know if you ever asked you that question.
So, you know, I have, fortunately, we have a venture firm, which you know about, Seven Wire Ventures. And, you know, we're doing a second fund. Our fund two, our fund one has turned out to be one of the most successful early stage healthcare venture firms in the country. And we're very proud of that. And we're now launching a fund two. We keep them very small, about $100 million. That allows us to interact with the 10 or so companies we have in each fund on a regular basis and really try to add value. And we think that's what makes our funds unique. And then separately, I'll go and move forward and probably start another company to try to move healthcare forward. So you can stay tuned on that. But, you know, I love to operate companies. I love to build things. And so that's really where my passion lies. And, you know, and that's what I'll do. And, you know, as for running for office, I mean, you know, I'm all about getting things done. And so, you know, we'll maybe that'll happen sometime in the future. But right now, I think the most effective we can do is through the private market.
Mm-hmm. So what are the things that excite you about building? Because you said that you love building.
Mm-hmm. In terms of building, first and foremost, it's about people. And I love watching people be successful, and I love approaching business problems in new and different ways. So when we look at the world, and let's take healthcare, and we say, what's not working? And let's think about what would make it better. Let's play with that problem. Let's turn it upside down. And it's not just about being better. It's about being different. So because if you're better, if I'm a little better than the last person, then they're going to be a little better than me. What we want to focus on is how do we completely do it differently and focus on creating something that people don't just like, that they love, that really makes them clinically healthier, and that does it at a lower cost. Because you have to, if you want to create real success like we did at Livongo, you have to tick off all three. People have to love it. You have to be able to show measurable clinical improvements. And last but not least, you have to do it at a lower cost. That's the beauty of what technology does. You know, when we merged Livongo with Teladoc, we created, you know, the largest global consumer-centric virtual care company in the world. And that will allow us to drive healthcare forward all across the world. And that's really what was so exciting about it.
So you mentioned that you're going to start another things. I assume we'll be in healthcare space. You know, what paradigms are you thinking about changing?
Well, I continue to believe that there are a lot of areas of healthcare that could be improved. And if you think about our health and our care, I separate those two. Today, there's very few advocates for all of us. So everybody benefits. In fact, when the cost of health healthcare goes up, that's actually a benefit for a lot of organizations. It's a benefit for health plans. They make more money. So United Healthcare, imagine them coming out and saying, next year our goal is to cut our revenues in half. They aren't really going to do that. And if you're running a health system, you actually don't want to, despite what they say, you don't want to do half the business next year. So I've heard people say, we want to keep our community so healthy that half our beds are empty. But we know that's not actually true, because that would be a big problem for most organizations. So we have to create new models that actually put the control back in the hands of each of us, that meet us where we are, and that provide care and give people incentives to provide better care at lower cost. Today, the incentives are just the opposite. And So that's what I'm looking to do, to create companies that say, we're going to provide better care. We're going to always have your interest in mind, not someone else's. We're not going to tell you to go to one doctor. I mean, we all know this. We all know that we go to our health plan says, go over here for an MRI. We know there's someplace closer or better or lower cost. Why didn't they send us there? The answer is because they're benefiting from sending us somewhere else. And, you know, I believe that all of us are pretty smart. I believe that consumers are pretty smart. And they know when something's not right. That's why they're dissatisfied. They know it's not a quality experience that we're providing today. And I'm not saying we're not trying, but again, if you survey most people, they say healthcare today is not better than it was 5 years ago. And yet, think of how much effort we've spent, how much money we've spent, how many new buildings we built. And most people would tell you they think their healthcare is worse today than it was. And if you look at the metrics, they're not wrong. So that's what we have to address. And we have to do it in new and different ways. But if we can do it, that represents the largest and most important challenge that we have to solve today. Because if you're not healthy, you don't worry about your education. You don't worry about going to work. And so health has to always come first. And if there's anything that the coronavirus taught us, it's that we are one community in health. We're not essential workers over here and rich people over here and poor people over there. It's all one community in health. And that's a lesson that I would love for us to take away from this terrible challenge of COVID.
That's beautifully said. Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to see what's your next endeavor. And this is, you know, with that kind of mindset, it gives me a lot of hope. And maybe we can get a better, healthier, and more efficient and more effective.
Great. Well, I hope so. It's been great talking to you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Casper Mossman, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.